This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. South Burlington seems to be everywhere and yet, in some ways, nowhere. It's the third largest municipality in the state, home to Burlington International Airport and a couple of heavily commercialized thoroughfares. But it has no real downtown of its own. And a recent study of residents showed that while most people like living in the city, they don't think it has a strong, unified community identity. Even those who felt like they got a sense of community thought that the city's identity really isn't being communicated to tourists. But some city leaders are working very hard to change that. And today on Vermont Edition, we're going to look at why South Burlington thinks it needs a city center and what challenges this relatively big city faces. We're also going to talk about the complicated relationship the city has with the airport and why nearly 100 houses near the airport are being demolished right now. And we're joined today by Pat Nowak, City Council Chair. Hi, Pat. Nice to have you with us.
Good afternoon. Thanks, Jane, for inviting me.
Also joining us are Alana Blanchard, the Project Director for City Center, and Paul Connor, Director of Planning and Zoning for South Burlington. Welcome to both of you.
Hi, Jane.
All right. So first things first, let's get a sense here. Let's just dream about South Burlington. And I'd like for each of you to tell me, just in a sentence or two, what you think South Burlington is today, how you would describe it to somebody who's not familiar with the city, or, you know, what you think of as sort of the essential characteristics of South Burlington. And then I'm going to ask you what you think the city should be, what your ideal vision of it is. And then we're going to spend the time talking about how we get from one place to the other. So, Pat Nowak, I'll start with you. What is South Burlington?
Well, South Burlington, from my perspective, and I've lived in South Burlington for somewhat over 30 years, has been a wonderful community. It's been a great place to raise children. It is a recreation or delight with all of the bike paths and recreation facilities and all. But the one thing that we've always lacked, of course, has been a downtown. And that has been the piece. And I think it lacked some spirit. We had collective spirit pieces within the school system, within our wonderful athletic programs, our academic programs. Our seniors had programs, but it seemed overall as a come-together place. That was the piece that was missing, and okay. That's the piece we're hoping to see come to fruition soon.
Fabulous. All right, Alana, you next.
So I agree with Pat. It's definitely a wonderful place to raise a family, amazing recreational opportunities. But there are some things that is really different from the rest of Vermont, and I see that in the future, South Burlington, it's going to be the type of place where you can wake up, walk out your front door, and get a cup of coffee within a block or so. It'll be the type of place where you can bike to work, which you can now, but it's more challenging. And it will also be the type of place where you can, without really trying, run into people that you know. So just walking around.
And Paul?
Well, South Burlington's a really unique community in the state of Vermont. It doesn't have its downtown historically ever since the separation from the city of Burlington 150 years ago this year.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. We're having a big celebration next month called City Fest. We'll talk about it a little later. It's a city that has incredible neighborhoods, a very strong sense of neighborhoods, and an opportunity to have a strong sense of community, as Pat was saying. It's divided up geographically, unlike almost any community in the state in terms of interstates and the geography of the town and railways and the lake and the airport. And so there's a challenge, but there's also an opportunity to create a new model for what a vibrant Vermont community can be, with a walkable, exciting downtown to be in, and really wonderful neighborhoods where people do want to ride their bike and walk around with their dog and know their neighbors and all the like.
Well, and we'd like to hear from people who live in South Burlington. We've gotten some descriptions now of what South Burlington is, especially for people who may not be as familiar with the city. But if you live there, what do you think? What do you think is South Burlington's identity? And what would you like to see in the city to make life better, to attract more tourists? Maybe you don't want to attract visitors. Maybe you just want your neighborhood to stay the way it is. We'd love to hear your perspective. And for people in other parts of the state, what do you think of when you you think of South Burlington, maybe just Burlington International Airport, or maybe you're familiar with a couple of big thoroughfares, Shelburne Road, Williston Road, where there are a lot of shopping outlets and it's very commercial. So we'd love to hear your sense of South Burlington, and we'll go a little bit deeper into some of the other parts of the city that you may not be as familiar with. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Paul Connor, you just mentioned that there's never really been a city center for South Burlington since it split from Burlington. How did that actually become a place where there is that kind of strip mall commercial development? Was it a zoning issue? I mean, how did that sort of come to be?
Well, the history really goes back to the pre-war times. The city of Burlington was well established in the 1800s. Many communities around Winooski and Shelburne and Hinesburg each had their little village centers. And South Burlington, after the legislature split the communities up in 1865, I guess. South Burlington was really the rural community. It's where the farmland was. And that stayed the case largely with the exception of a few neighborhoods like Queen City Park until the 1940s. And that's when the first neighborhoods really started to get built. The Mayfair Park, Chamberlain neighborhood, or the Orchards neighborhood off Shelburne Road. Following that in the 1950s, that's when some of the car dealerships started to show up and some of the what are now iconic places like Al's French Fries came in. And that's sort of how that grew up between 1940 and 1970. And in the time since then, we've really been, you know, starting to think about what is the future of the community. And the idea of a city center actually showed up in the city plans as early as the 1980s about how do we start to focus development and create exactly what Councilor Nowak was just speaking about.
Well, and Alana, I want to bring you back in here to talk a little bit about city center since you're the project manager. But Pat Nowak, let's move back to you here for a second to talk about why you think that's important to residents and to the community to have a city center. As Paul was mentioning, South Burlington has never had one. It's functioned pretty well over the years. As you know, you've all said this is a wonderful place to live. So what is it that you're trying to establish and really improve upon?
Well, there's several items. And two of the words that were used were dream and opportunity. This dream to have this city centerpiece has been out there for almost as long as I've lived in South Burlington. To see this dream become a vision, the vision become a pending reality here, a planning reality, is wonderful. But the reason I think we need it is to really bring the cohesiveness together. We love being near Burlington. We are not Burlington. We are South Burlington. We are unique. And by having this new city center, it's going to do a lot of things. First of all, it's going to bring in much necessary housing that we're going to need. And this is going to be housing that is going to be, I'll use the adjectives, it will be more of a multi-level housing. So there will be many opportunities for people to live there. More
when important, you say multi-level, you mean in terms of how much they cost or in terms of the actual structure?
I would say the actual structure.
So we're looking at apartment buildings.
There. Okay,
apartment
got it. Type, yes. And there will be a percentage of that street. Now, for those that may not be aware, we do not own the land that abuts that. We only own the road itself, which was deeded to us. And so the rest of the land, we have to count on other unique ways in order to develop it for public use. But the private use piece is going to be a big part of this. And that's going to be housing. And the housing will bring people. The people will want to have places, as Alana referred to walk, to work, and so on. Now, it's going to take up, I look at this and say, it's going to bring in some of the housing that's going to be necessary as we're seeing some of the homes that were around the airport that were more of the affordable range. This is going to offer some alternatives as well for people. But we have a growing community. We have a lot of people that want to live here. We need to make it vibrant, exciting. We have lots of wonderful things to offer and absolutely outstanding school district, among other things. But we do miss some of the spirit and the spirit of pulling it together. And Alana can elaborate on this part, but we just went through a branding study. And the branding study, one of the pieces I thought was interesting, said we lacked culture. We lacked the arts. No, I think we're a cultural community. We just need to be able to show it. And I think this is one of the places where we could have a place that could help us do that. So I think it's just taking the wonderful minds of my colleagues here with me, along with others. And I think this is just going to put South Burlington right on the map again and separate us from all of the other communities around us.
All right, Alana Blanchard, let's get into some of the specifics. So Pat's been giving us this big overview. First of all, for people who are familiar with South Burlington, let's talk about where the vision of City Center is. So people may know Dorset. They may have heard in the last year or two about the exciting, for some people, news of Pier 1 and Trader Joe's coming and Healthy Living, the mm-hmm. supermarket right there. So that's sort of the entrance point to
right.
City Center?
Yeah, City Center will have two. City Center is actually focuses on Dorset Street and Williston Road, so those areas that are already built up with commercial development, large parking lots. There's a lot of room for expansion in those areas, and it wraps around a large parcel that's behind the Barnes & Noble and the DMV that used to be a racetrack. And so that area has since grown in to some extent, although there's some remnants. And so that's a largely vacant parcel that can be developed and that we own a right-of-way for Market Street. It's currently is paved. It's a paved roadway, recently paved, and will be. We're committed to reconstructing that as a full-on street with trees and landscaping, benches, a very attractive street that'll have a walking area around some ponds. So and then that would allow the areas alongside it that are in private hands to redevelop. So that whole area, it's right across the street from the University Mall. It's right next to Williston Road and Al's French Fries.
Near the highway.
Near the airport. It's a great area to build a community in that is a little where people live closer together and are close to shopping and, close to all the amenities that you want when you live in a downtown.
Well, as City Council Chair Pat Nowak mentioned, there are a lot of private developers that you're going to have to work with on this. So the city owns the right-of-way, right, that main road. But how are you going to get the developers to see your same vision for what you want so that it's not just another strip mall? You want something that feels like community. How do you make that happen? Is there special zoning that has to go forward? And we can talk to Paul about that too.
So, I think there's two parts of it. One is outreach and making sure that people are aware, what the community's interests are. And then you're absolutely right. Zoning is a big part of it. And that's really Paul's bailiwick. And he's been working very hard on it along with the community.
Sure. Well, we have been developing the South Burlington Planning Commission, several committees, volunteers, property owners, developers, businesses, everyone has been for the last couple of years been working on a complete rewrite of the regulations in that area to set the groundwork for the type of development that is both feasible and desirable for the community. So there's that side of it. And then the other side of it that Alana can actually speak to is the tax increment financing, financial incentives to help development to occur in a compact way, in a way that sometimes be a little more costly, and allow us to participate in that.
Before we leave the zoning, so without getting too wonky on this, how do you do that? I mean, there are lots of different ways to zone so that you can get development and you can have flexibility, and so that developers feel like they have the ability to turn a profit, but that still works with what the city is hoping to do. Are you working on different zoning models?
Yeah, we started out looking at a number of different models, and where we've landed is to move in a direction that creates greater predictability. So there's a lot more in the draft regulation that would be an administrative approval. So there's a lot more predictability, which is one of the things that we hear the most from the development community about what's necessary for them. It takes a lot less emphasis on what's going on inside the building, so we don't have to be having debates amongst ourselves or with the development community about whether somebody's a grocery store or a bakery or a bagel shop. And instead focuses really on what is the relationship of the building to its to the street and the street presence. How do we make a walkable community? And if we look back in history, great buildings that are well-designed, that are walkable, can be all sorts of different things over time. And so that's what we're really focusing on.
So are you visiting places like Newport that are also thinking about this kind of walkable downtown space with flexible building opportunities?
Absolutely. We meet with our colleagues and go visit all the different communities that are looking at things like this. Newport has been, Winooski is, Shelburne is, Burlington is, Colchester is, and you know, we talk regularly with our counterparts in Barrie and Rutland and Montpelier also.
So, Alana, we've got several callers who want to get in on this conversation, but Paul just mentioned tax increment financing, TIF districts, and this is something that you're going to be using or hope to be using, or already have the TIF financing in place?
We have a TIF district in place, so that means that we're approved to use this great financing tool. It's a state program, and so we've been approved for it. And it's really critical because it really gives us a seat at the table. If we can build a road for a project, it enables us to set the terms by which we would build that road and thereby ensure that the project is really a high-quality project for the community.
So we're talking about South Burlington today. Lots of listeners calling in from South Burlington and elsewhere. If you'd like to weigh in, go to vpr.net, click on Vermont Edition to share your thoughts, or you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to a couple of our callers. Charles is with us from South Burlington. Hi, Charles. Go ahead.
I have to respectfully disagree with a comment one of your guests made about we're not part of the Burlington community. Give you an example. I had some relatives from overseas came to visit me in my home in South Burlington. And you know, we took them down to the waterfront. We took them to eat on Church Street. We took them to a show at the Flynn Theater and seeing the downtown of Burlington. And I think that is part of our community. I'm only a 20-minute walk from downtown, and downtown Burlington, that is.
So,
and
Charles, let me ask you this. Fine. Are you satisfied with what you have, or would you like to have that kind of feel in South Burlington?
Well, I mean, I'm more or less satisfied. You know, we are, I guess, I don't want to say a bedroom community, but we are a little different. But the downtown is Burlington. Where do people go if they want to do something in this area here? That's where they like to go. And I'm very happy with downtown Burlington. I think it's well run. South Burlington, where I live, is nice. The lady commented on the schools and stuff, and all that's fine. But to get into an enormous project like this, where the taxpayers really could be on the hook if these developers don't pony up and participate in this. And I don't think that's something that we're hearing people talk about as well.
Charles, thanks for your comments. I appreciate that. We heard as well from Chris in Middlebury, who says it's definitely possible for a suburban city to create a downtown. Look at St. Louis Park, Minnesota, which did a good job of it. Burnsville, Minnesota, also in the process. And let's go to John, who's calling in from Royalton. Hi, John. Your thoughts today. John, are you there? I hear some cars zooming behind you.
I had to pull back over. Yeah, I just, I'm not, I came up here in 95, and I always thought that Burlington and South Burlington were all in one and the same. And I've always associated South Burlington with the strip malls down on Route 7. And I thought that I felt bad for you guys. and I now got a different feeling for the whole issue, and my only problem would be what developers might do to change things and keep it from becoming going from a nice, warm community into too much of a commercial community. That's about.
Yeah, John, thanks for your thoughts on that. Let's take one more, and then we're going to give everybody a chance to respond here. Eric is with us from Burlington. Hi, Eric. Go right ahead.
Oh, hey. Hi. Hi there, Jane.
Hi.
Hey, last caller before the last one, I agree totally. With all respect, I feel like South Burlington is a part of Burlington. You can walk to the downtown. I feel like it's inconceivable. It's shaped like an amoeba. The town is divided by two interstates. It's divided by an airport that's really too close to Burlington to begin with. As Burlington moves, it grows. The airport is so close to the town, and then Chamberlain neighborhood, which has some of the only affordable homes in Chittenden County, they're starting to tear them down. To me, it's absurd, and I can only imagine, like, I don't know why anyone would want to do this when you can walk from the Chamberlain neighborhood or the Orchards right to the lake or to downtown Burlington. To me, I feel like this is gratuitous on the part of developers, and whomever else's pockets are going to be filled by these actions. And I'll take my comments off here.
Yeah, Eric, thanks for that. I appreciate your perspective on this. We're actually going to talk a little bit more deeply coming up about why the houses near the airport are being demolished, what that's a part of and why, and we appreciate your take on that. I'm going to give our guests 60 seconds here to think about responses to everything we just heard. We'll take a quick break. We're talking about South Burlington. We're talking about why this hub of commerce and commuting would like to change its image, why it feels like its community deserves a downtown city center, and we're hearing some pushback from that from our listeners. You can share your thoughts with us. Go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition or call 1-800-639-2211. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're spending some time exploring the issues in one of Vermont's biggest communities. South Burlington is the third most populous community in Vermont, but it often gets overshadowed by its next-door neighbor, Burlington. SoBu wants to have its own identity, and the rest of the state can clearly delineate more of a community feel for its residents. So we're hearing about how some city leaders want to make that happen. We're also hearing from people in South Burlington and beyond about your thoughts on the city, and you can share yours. Go to vpr.net. Click on Vermont Edition to post a comment or call 1-800-639-2211. All right, I promised you guys all a chance to respond here to what we've been hearing from listeners, and I'm going to ask you to do that briefly so we can make sure we get in a little bit about the Chamberlain neighborhood near the airport as well. But we're talking with Pat Nowak, City Council Chair, Alana Blanchard, Project Manager for City Center, and Paul Connor, Director of Planning and Zoning for the City of South Burlington. So what do you think? Hearing some pushback, also hearing some questions about why do we need a city center? Why can't Burlington just be our city center? We're going to start with the City Council Chair.
Well, we are close to Burlington. We were part of Burlington at one time, and I understand that. And we're not looking to change our image. I look at this as an expansion of the image that we have in South Burlington and adding on to it. And remember, we do share a lot of things. I take nothing away. I enjoy the activities in Burlington. Burlingtonians enjoy parts with us. They enjoy our recreational paths. We're all joined, and we share on bike paths, certainly, and that's something that's throughout the county. We all share services through the Chittenden County Regional Planning Commission, so we are collaboratively together. But I think all of us have a unique piece. For example, Waterbury did this. They wanted to have their specific image. I think they've had that. If we look at Winooski and the changes that have happened there, they have an image now that is different than what they had before. I don't think we are any different than the others. We just want to have a little bit of that identity, and this downtown is really an important part to it.
All right, Alana Blanchard, but we heard from Charles and Eric who are saying this is just lining the pockets of some developers, and it's not something we need.
So I'd love to respond to that. The TIF district is a way that you take the tax revenue from future development and use it to pay for the debt to build public infrastructure that the public needs. And for South Burlington, it's money that the city would not have otherwise and that would not be accessible to essentially the community. And so in order to make sure that that funding is used in a way that's responsible, but also to ensure that it does not fall on the taxpayer, the City Council is working on a TIF policy. So it's a partnership policy, and it will look at, you know, what types of projects meet the community need, but also how do we write a contract in such a way that the developer, if they do not realize that project, is on the hook as opposed to the city being on the hook. So we want to ensure that there is a financial security built into each project that's undertaken that directly benefits a developer, that developer is reciprocating in terms of their financial security.
And Paul Connor, you want to add anything?
Yeah, I'll just add briefly. You know, at the big picture level of all this, there is development that's occurring in Vermont. Some of it's in South Burlington. Some of it is in other places. And the question that we are looking at is how do we best as a community and as a state want to see development take place? How do we make sure that we have vibrant places where people want to be and also protect our rural areas, both in South Burlington and around the state? And so having an area where we can focus development make use of existing infrastructure, not plow additional roads. That's a really big part of this as well. It's not just sort of a vision in a community, but it's really about smart development, smart growth, smart communities.
Well, speaking of growth and communities and things that South Burlington is doing, I want to add another little facet to this conversation, because one of the things the community is doing is participating in a National Energy Prize competition. And we're going to hear a little bit about that now from Karen McKinney, who's on the South Burlington Energy Committee. Hi, Karen. Nice to have you on the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So South Burlington is actually a couple of years into this national competition now. It's based on reducing energy consumption in your community. Started back in 2013. The winners won't be announced until 2017. It's called the Georgetown University Energy Prize, and South Burlington is one of 50 semifinalists around the country. What are you actually doing to cut energy consumption?
We have a lot of programs that we've started in the residential sector. There are three components here. There's the municipal, there's the school, and there's the residential. And we have a task force working in each of those areas. Residentially, we're working with homeowners by hosting home energy parties, which is sort of like a Tupperware party for energy. We're getting out into the community, meeting with neighborhood groups, and educating them and doing some instant install opportunities with them, and trying to help them realize not only their own savings, but also ultimately reduce our electric and natural gas usage for the competition. I want to shout out and say hi to Pat, Alana, and Paul, and just say my future, of course, with City Center and with South Burlington is that we put ourselves on the national map as energy efficient leaders, and that any new buildings that we have are built to the highest level of efficiency possible, which I think leads to a smart, vibrant, sustainable recognition and identity. So I think the Energy Prize and participating in this national project is helping along those ways as well.
So you actually feel a sense of community through doing this project too?
I really do. We're holding monthly neighbor library workshops on different topics where residents are coming. They're free. And the sense of community is building and building. We have a Facebook page that's almost at 500 likes now. We have a ways to go, but it's more and more each day. And that's Energy Prize, Facebook. .com/EnergyPrize, and we have a great website, which is EnergyPrize.org, with hundreds of energy saving tips, all of our events, and all kinds of links to help people figure out what they can do for home energy savings.
All right, and we'll put a link up to that at VPR.net on the Vermont Edition page. Karen McKinney is part of the South Burlington Energy Committee. This prize that South Burlington is competing for, by the way, has a $5 million purse, so it's a pretty large national prize here. Karen, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you so much.
Talking today about South Burlington, let's go to John, who's calling in from Richmond. Hi, John. Your thoughts today.
Hi, Jane. I think the group is doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is planning. Some of the calls have been about, you know, how things are now. But things the way things are now in South Burlington were affected greatly by decisions made in Burlington in the 70s and 80s, Church Street, the waterfront, so on and so forth. If you want to plan for a successful future, you have to start before it arrives. I commend them to looking at any and all options and engaging the community effectively so there's input, so there's buy-in, so there's acceptance.
John, thanks for your call. I appreciate that. You're getting a silent thank you from Pat Nowak, City Council Chair, as you talk there. She certainly appreciates what you're saying. We've got a couple minutes left, and I want to talk about this issue at the airport because a couple people have brought it up. I drive by the airport every day, so I've been seeing this. I think it's 97 homes have been purchased by the City of Burlington, right, through some funding with the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration. And they're being demolished. My understanding, Pat Nowak, is that that's because they are within this envelope, this noise envelope, as determined by the FAA, that it's too loud near the airport. So the FAA has bought up these houses at market rate. And then South Burlington gets to decide what to do with the land after these houses are demolished. Is
that
right?
Well, we have the zoning. If I can just go back and give you a one-minute wrap-up on that. It was a voluntary program that was done for homes within the 65 DNA. And the persons, if they made the choice to sell, they had fair market value was paid. They were given a relocation person for it. They were paid their moving costs, the closing costs, and a relocation expert was assigned to them. That being said, there's a lot of houses coming down now. We expect that the project, I am on the Airport Commission, the project we expect, we've heard from our Director of Aviation, could be completed as early as September 1st. It's becoming a very park-like setting. We like this very much in there. But as I always say, once we get to the other side of the street, we control the zoning. And I think that is very much what Paul would be able to answer for you better on the zoning for that.
And let me ask you this, because as you mentioned, it's a voluntary buyout. Right. So there are a lot of people who have not sold their homes, who are still living there.
Some. There are some that have. And
so how do you make sure that they don't have a demolished sense of community there as well?
Well, there are a few homes where they have chosen just to defer when they leave. You know, the property, is my understanding, is that everything is completed on all the homes that are being bought out. There are no more that are going to be bought, but there are some that would not come down. For example, I was told there was an elderly couple. They wanted to wait till the youngest grandchild graduated, and then they're going to move, and that home would be taken then at that time. But I think what people are seeing around them right now, I've gone out to talk. I go through that neighborhood every single day. I've talked to many of the neighbors. They're very pleased with what they're seeing. They're not unhappy with the change.
And Paul Connor, then what happens to that area? I mean, it is very park-like now, but there's a lot of development at the airport, which we'll have to get into in another show. But what do you think about that space?
Yeah, well, we're very excited that we have a project going right now. We have established a committee through the city council. We got grant funding from the Regional Planning Commission. And we have a committee looking at exactly those questions. What happens to the land that where homes have been acquired? What happens outside of that? Transportation issues, noise issues, building community, which was a conversation in City Center, but is also a really important question in our neighborhoods and a neighborhood that's seen a lot of change like Chamberlain.
Well, we'll keep watching and we'll have to keep following up on what's happening in South Burlington and in the many different neighborhoods as these all develop. We've been talking today with Pat Nowak, South Burlington City Council Chair, Alana Blanchard, who's Project Manager for City Center, and Paul Connor, who's the Director of Planning and Zoning. Thanks to all three of you. Really appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us here.
Anytime. Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to be speaking about the 2-year anniversary of the Lac Mégantic disaster in Quebec. You're listening to Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The explosion of oil tanker train cars in Lac Mégantic, Quebec, shook many in the region and across the country. The train derailed in the middle of the night right in the center of the small village, and many of the town's buildings caught fire. 47 people died, and the damage has still not fully been repaired. Last Monday marked the 2-year anniversary of that accident, and yesterday a judge in Quebec ruled in a case dealing with a compensation fund for victims. CBC reporter Thomas Dagla has been following the story and joins us now with an update. Thomas, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
You were just back in Lac Mégantic for the 2-year anniversary. Can you describe what the town looks like today?
The center of town, which was once the downtown where there were bars and restaurants and shops, it looks like a construction zone right now. If you drive by, it looks like something is being built there. But there's actually nothing being built. There are piles of gray and brown dirt. What is essentially happening is there are still crews 2 years after that derailment. Crews are still decontaminating the soil because of all that oil that seeped from the tanker cars into the soil. That work is still being done, and the mayor of Lac Mégantic says hopefully that'll all be done by September, and after that they still hope to reconstruct some buildings in that part of town where it all happened.
So it's just the fact that they were so contaminated that has kept that construction from moving more quickly?
Exactly. The oil that seeps into the ground really spread throughout the former downtown area, so that decontamination work is still ongoing. I should mention that there is another part of town, a new part of town, just a stone's throw from the former downtown that has been built up with new restaurants, new shops. And if you go to that part of town, it looks like a brand new subdivision, and you wonder what happened here. And of course, the reason is the former downtown was destroyed in that derailment and explosion 2 years ago.
So what events were held to commemorate the 2-year anniversary?
This year, the commemoration was a lot more subdued, I would say, smaller than what happened last year for the 1-year anniversary. Last year, the premier, the governor general were in town. There was a big church mass here in Lac Mégantic that was shown on big screens outdoors. But this year, a lot smaller. The church bells rang 47 times in memory of the 47 victims, and there was a minute of silence for the victims. And I spoke with some of the families of the victims who said that's all they needed to remember their family members, because, you know, you can't forget that for these people, the two-year anniversary is just another day. They of course, think of this every day of their life now.
Mm-hmm. Trains are running back through the city now, or the town, rather, but they're not transporting oil. That's scheduled to start in January. Have any changes been made since the explosion to address rail safety in Canada?
There have been changes. For one, there is a gradual replacement ongoing right now, both in Canada and the United States, of the DOT-111, the tanker cars that punctured and exploded in Lac Mégantic. They are used on both sides of the border. In fact, I should mention that train that derailed had actually initially come, the oil shipment had initially come from North Dakota. So when it comes to rail travel, the borders are sort of hard to see when it comes to, you know, between the U.S. and Canada. But anyway, just a few weeks ago, our federal transport minister here in Canada went to Washington, D.C. for a joint announcement with American officials about new, thicker tanker cars, DOT-117s, that are going to be phased in. But again, to get rid of these DOT-111 tanker cars is going to take several years.
And my understanding, at least previous to very recently, was that all of the rail companies were rolling in these new tanker cars, but it was happening fairly slowly. There weren't a lot of regulations that were requiring them to do that right away. Is that still the case?
Right. And there are still also many questions, not only about the tanker cars, but about the state of the rails. If you want to talk about Lac Mégantic itself, there are a couple of committees, people, just citizens in town, who have started voicing concern about the state of the rails, knowing that oil may be transported on those rails as early as January. Canada's Transportation Safety Board, in fact, pointed to some locations around Lac Mégantic, saying the wear on those rails is more than what is acceptable. Yet Central Maine and Quebec Railway, which is the new railway running there, they've said they're going to invest in those rails and repair them, but the citizens still waiting for that to happen.
So, Thomas, I mentioned that there was a legal decision just yesterday relating to settlement money for victims of this train derailment. The families of the 47 people who died from the explosion reached a settlement for $431 million, Canadian dollars, but the release of that money has been stalled because the rail company Canadian Pacific hadn't agreed to the settlement and wanted to be released from the group of companies that are actually contributing money to that fund. Canadian Pacific argued that it was not responsible for damages because the cars didn't belonged to the company. The tracks were not CP tracks. CP had actually transported the tank cars to Montreal, but then they were handed over to the Montreal, Maine, and Atlantic Railway, which was responsible for operating the train when it actually derailed. That company, the Montreal, Maine, and Atlantic Railway, went bankrupt and doesn't exist anymore. But at any rate, the judge yesterday dismissed Canadian Pacific's challenge to the settlement. So what happens now with that money?
So there are a couple things that happen now. That, as you mentioned, $430 million settlement, that now is going to be divvied up, but not only between the families of the victims, but also the provincial and federal governments who paid for the cleanup, and also lawyers who have been hired over the past 2 years to deal with this settlement. So that's the two dozen parties that are going to be putting money in this $430 million settlement. And yesterday, one of the lawyers representing the families of the victims says this court decision paves the way for us now to sue Canadian Pacific Railway. If CP in the end agrees to put their money into this settlement, then that $430 million figure will actually grow. But for the time being, it actually looks like that court battle involving CP isn't done yet. The good news, if there is any, for the families of the victims here is that they could see some compensation perhaps as early as this fall.
And for Canadian Pacific, that still remains to be seen what and how much it pays and when, because it still does not want to pay settlement money. It says it's not responsible for this accident. Is that right?
Exactly. And a spokesperson for CP Railway told us yesterday they're reviewing the decision. They may appeal, but they're not saying that openly yet. They're saying we have no comment for the time being, but they're widely expected to appeal the decision.
Thomas Dagla is a reporter for the CBC based in Montreal. We've been talking about the two-year anniversary of the train derailment in Lac Mégantic, Quebec. Thomas, thank you very much for speaking with us.
You're welcome. Good to talk to you.
Each summer, for 100 years, Middlebury College has hosted a language study program. Students sign a pledge that they will only communicate and interact in the language they are studying for the entire 6 or 7 weeks of the program. 11 languages are taught using this strict immersion approach, and the programs attract everyone from art history undergrads to business people to sopranos? As the college celebrates the centennial year of the language schools, VPR's Patty Daniels visited one specialty class at Middlebury, German for singers.
Weil es doch einen Ausweg für ihn gäbe.
About 20 students sit around a table in a German literature class. Their binders are open and photocopies of texts are spread out in front of them. But before we go further, let me confess. Ich spreche kein Deutsch. I don't speak German. And the students that I observed aren't allowed to talk to me in English. But their instructors, like Hans Gabriel, aren't beholden to the language pledge. So he got me up to speed on today's lesson.
Aber denken Sie an das Original. Ist das sehr familienfreundlich? Nein.
And you can see, sort of in the discussion, it's a struggle for them to be able to express themselves in German.
Sehr familienfreundlich. Also, das Librett.
This is a beginning literature course, and today's class starts with a reference to Charles Darwin, focuses on the text of Hansel and Gretel, moves into Bertolt Brecht's philosophy of theater, and wraps up with a discussion of Richard Wagner's music. That's not too shabby for beginners.
Und Philosophie und Gesellschaft und alles, das bringt zusammen. Und es ist ein total Effekt für diese.
Their German level is low. But their intellectual level is high. As opera singers, they have a lot of this background knowledge. So the key is really to find a way in the limited German to reference that.
The German for Singers program attracts mostly opera singers. Many of these students plan to move to Germany, find agents, and sing there professionally. But they arrive at Middlebury not knowing much German, say their teachers. The students have 3 to 4 hours of classroom study each day, and then go across campus to work for another 2 to 3 hours with singing coaches and music instructors at the Performing Arts Center, where, again, all instruction is in German.
Machen wir noch einmal.
They take turns rehearsing next to the shiny black piano at the center of the room. Emily Donato and Adam Coffey sing this duet from Mozart's Magic Flute. They both plan to pursue careers in Germany this fall, says music director Stefan Reuter, who accompanies them on piano.
Nacht auf zwei Weg. Das ist nicht auf drei, so wie Nacht, sondern Nacht.
Singing instructor Stefan Boving steps in with a bit of coaching.
To. Du musst nicht to.
Ah, okay.
Du sollst ein O machen, aber der Mund darf.
You may saw it, his breath doesn't get deep enough. When the breath of the singer is more in the chest, it disturbs the vocal cords.
Ja.
The students' voices are stunning, but the instructors are listening for detail.
Gut, aus, nicht un.
Ah, ja.
Ja,
aus. Das ist
American singers are used to a different kind of pronunciation. Of course, German audience will know better what they are doing well or what they are doing wrong, but I think even for an American audience it has to be for the character of the music. That the words are as clear as possible.
German is so different. It's so jumpy and kind of springy. And that's very hard for American singers to learn.
That's Bettina Matthias, the director of the German School. As each student rehearses, Matthias and fellow singers and instructors look on attentively, mouthing the words and making notations in their sheet music. Matthias's background in music makes the German for Singers program special to her.
German has a very particular sound system and sound world, and I want them to understand it as a musical world that is clear to them now and makes sense and has a cultural component that they want to convey to the audience.
Matthias says even after 15 summers of working in the German language school, it's still satisfying to watch students throw themselves into what she calls a crazy linguistic and social experiment. For VPR News, I'm Patty Daniels in Middlebury.
Danke, super, sehr gut, sehr schön, sehr schön.
The German for Singers program at Middlebury College will stage an opera at the end of the summer program. They encourage the general public to attend regardless of the language you speak. We have details at vpr.net. Tomorrow on this program, artificial intelligence, mind clones, and broadcasting your personality into space. We'll talk with Bruce Duncan of the TerraSem Movement Foundation in Lincoln about his vision of the future. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Singeri, and Sam Gale Rosen, with production assistance from Aaron Lucy. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. And our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.